fans, it's time for Flames Unfiltered, your spot for Calgary Flames hockey talk.
Mathematically alive, emotionally dead. Good evening and welcome to another edition of Flames Unfiltered, hosted by Kyle Lewis and Brad Brood. We are here on a, what day is it? Wednesday evening, talking Flames hockey. Kyle, good to have you here. How was your day going?
Typical Wednesday, just, you know, middle of the week, over halfway there now, I suppose, at this time of day, but just slogging through. How about you?
It's one of those weeks. You know, it should be nicer outside. It's not. It's freaking annoying. It's getting frustrating, this winter dragging on. And it just, there's really not a hell of a lot we can do about it, so. And then you got our Flames, which are confusing as hell, and we're going to get into that on the show today. I got a question, though. You're a big game worn jersey guy.
Yes.
And I love it when you post on that Facebook site. I got a question. It's so last week in the Vegas game, Troy Stetcher got into a fight with, I can't remember who.
Yeah, I know where you're going with this.
He tore the hell out of that jersey. So yeah. I'm looking at it, and I was looking at a picture of it after the game, and I'm like, that's not fixable.
Oh, hell no, no.
So what happens to that jersey, and is that more sought after because of that?
It is more sought after because of that. It certainly won't be worn again. Typically, jerseys, there's three sets of each, then like for your home and your away, and then you have your alternates, your reverse retros, whatever. So in that case, that jersey...
So each year there's three sets of home and three sets of away?
Yes, so for example...
Wow, I thought that was two. Oh, nope. That's a lot.
At one point there was.
Okay.
But as a Lewis, I won Trevor Lewis's jerseys last year, so yep. I got his home set too. So the retro red home, so middle of the season, worn until the playoffs, and then I got his away set three, which was his away playoff jersey. So, that jersey would be highly sought after, worth quite a lot. The funny thing to me when that happened was is that the play-by-play guys had no idea what was going on. They kept suspecting injury or equipment problems. Yeah,
I saw it right away.
Yeah, most of us did. And he's in the hallway with, like, you know, he just, like, Hulk Hogan'd his jersey is what it looked like.
It is. I could see it. I'm like, that thing's destroyed. Yeah,
I couldn't believe Troy Stetcher tore it that much.
They're hard. I mean, to get through the collar.
Yeah.
That's a hell of a thing.
Yeah, I got jerseys from Denny Gauthier, Jeff Cowan, like some tough guys, and those jerseys have a ton of stick marks and blood and whatever else, and none of them are mangled like that. So that could also speak to the quality these days, because as you may have noticed too, a lot of people are really upset that Fanatics, the NHL's you know, number one merchandise supplier, is now doing game-worn jerseys, and the game-worn community is really up in arms over that.
I saw that, and that starts in 24-25, and it's a 10-year deal.
Yeah.
I was taken aback by this. I was, and I'm not a game-worn guy. I would love to get into it. It's, you know what, Kyle? It's one of those things, like, I'm freaking deathly afraid to get into it. Because I know
you should be. And it's, you get like buyer's regret and seller's remorse, and like it's the worst.
I've got a few game pucks and I've collected a few things of that, and I got some sticks, and I'm just deathly afraid to go down the road, but I want to. But
you know, actually, now that we're talking about this, from now on until I go through my collection, I'll wear a different one in each show. And we'll do like a quick little blurb on whose it is and what season it's from or whatever.
That would be cool. Cause I love collectibles. I do. And I think a lot of our listeners do. And I think a lot of
hockey fans
do. I do. See, hockey's a cool sport in that we get a lot of stuff. We have game sticks, pucks, jerseys. I have a couple pairs of gloves that players have used and things like that. But I am deathly afraid to get into it a lot, because I know how I am with collecting, and I'd have to have freaking everything. I'd have to have a player's full set for the season. And
Guy that collects Mark Recchi jerseys. And of course, Recchi played a very long time. He must have 15 Recchi jerseys. Another guy the other day was actually Peter Sikora. Had a huge Sikora collection. The Ducks, wow. The Devils, the Oilers. I'm sure the guy was Czech. I would suspect it, but it was really kind of cool. But yeah, it's once you go down that rabbit hole, like it's like I sold both my Alex Tanguay jerseys. I'm like, oh, why did I sell those? Like he was such a good player for the Flames. I have Mike Camilleri's home playoff jersey. I'm like, oh, I'm going to keep that. He was a great player. Like, but then you get these really obscure ones. Like for some reason, you just like the guy. Yeah. So.
Like I told you, I want a Sean Donovan one. I loved him when he was in Calgary. I did. Yeah. I loved him. But my eyes are finding that are slim. I'm such a Michael Backlund fan. I see that if I was going to go down this road, like getting one of his would probably be my starting point. Just because
that's how much probably my most sought after one is my Backlund that I have from 17-18, I believe, has a 100th anniversary patch on the arm.
You showed me that one. That's cool.
People, I mean, Backlund's as far as Flames goes, like, you know, he's top 10 all-time Flames, I think, at this point.
Yeah. Oh, I think so. And that's the summer conversation we're going to be having probably, huh?
Yeah, hopefully not too soon, but we'll find out. Stay tuned.
Definitely find out. So, yeah, I don't know. I just saw that night and I thought, I gotta ask Kyle about that. That's a
cool jersey. Somebody's gonna scoop that up and it's gonna be plastered all over the internet because that's a cool one. But I can't believe how much that jersey came apart. Wow.
That's crazy. On today's episode, it's gonna be a busy one, and it's been a busy week for the Flames. We break down four games, two wins, two losses, points in three. Sure as hell doesn't feel like that, but we got those points, I guess. So I don't know. We'll touch on some Flames news, some injuries, arena talk, Markstrom's recent anger issues. Then we'll get to the big stuff. Has Daryl Sutter lost the room? Kyle and I will discuss that. We'll also talk about other stuff supposedly going on in the room and give our take on that. And then touch on Flames prospect Matthew Coronato as he hits the NCHA Final 16 this weekend and is on Brad Treliving is reportedly heading out to watch him and hopefully sign him. We'll discuss how that looks and if that happens. And then we'll wrap with a preview of three games this week, all three at the Saddle Dome. Oh boy, another busy show. Flames Unfiltered. All right, Kyle, let's get her going. We'll talk about the Vegas game last Thursday night. I was just noticing this as I was pulling up the scores. The Flames, minus the LA game, have been putting up five or more goals a game here in the last little stretch. That's didn't seem like it, does it?
Largely because that LA game was such a flop. They were so, like they fell on their faces so badly in that game. It really took the wind out of our sails in terms of appreciating the fact they've actually scored a lot of goals recently.
Yeah.
In particular, the guy behind you, Tyler Toffoli, man, he's been good. Oof.
Really, really good.
Man, really. We were wrong about him.
Shit. That was our preseason prediction, Kyle. How brutal was that? You know what? I'm predicting a lot more things next year, and hopefully they turn out good. I'm going to predict a lot more
than that. We've already hit rock bottom with our underestimation of Tyler Toffoli, so we have nowhere to go but up.
Yeah. Hopefully we hit the Huberdeau being great and Kadri being great too pretty well, huh?
Well, that's everybody. That wasn't just us. Some people have more faith in all that we did, and credit to them, but yeah.
Well, I don't know. I think those chapters are not finished yet. But
certainly. God, I hope not. The contract's just started. Well, one of them hasn't even started yet.
Gosh. 7-2 final in Vegas. Calgary goes to Vegas. First win in Vegas. So that's freaking due, too. So I don't know. What a night. Tyler Toffoli. Just amazing. 2 goals, 4 points. It gets him to a 60 points on the season. It's his new career high. And I don't know. This night probably, before this game, I was pissed. Because Peltier and Duer were both scratched. And I'm just like, where are we going?
We were texting each other. We were both super angry, as I recall.
So I wasn't all that excited to even turn this one on. And it was a good hockey game. The Flames are really good in this hockey game. Weegar was great. We talked about Toffoli being great. It was a pretty damn good team effort. Markstrom made some big saves, and And the Flames head out of Vegas with a 7-2 victory. And I believe at that point they were 3 points off of Winnipeg, and things looked pretty decent.
Yeah, against a Vegas team that was fairly flat, but still really important to get a, 2 points in that building, which they'd obviously never done. So, yeah, there was a lot to like about that game. You took advantage of a tired opponent and looked like we had some momentum leaving Vegas. But
so Saturday, Dallas comes to the Saddledome, and
very entertaining game.
Yeah.
As much as the result angered me, it was very entertaining.
So I got a question for you, and I had two people on Facebook tell me I was stupid on this, which I guess that's not out of the ordinary, but
it's Facebook.
Yeah. The question was posed, is this 2 points or is this a point? Okay, since we only got a point because we lost in overtime 6-5, is this a point gained or a point lost? And I said a point gained, because anytime you're down 2-0 a few minutes into the game and you freaking salvage a point, am I being crazy? Am I being too positive on that?
It depends on your perspective. From that perspective, absolutely, it's a point game. But from the perspective of, hey, this is a game you really need to win, and you only came away with 1 point, it's like a glass half full,
yeah,
half empty.
And I mean, I get people's argument. Well, we were up in the third. Like, I understand that. I understand that. But the fact is, we were still down 2. Like, before, let's put it this way. I was at a junior hockey game. I knew I was going to miss about probably the first 15 minutes of the game, 10 minutes of the game. I got into my car after the hockey game, was driving home. My daughter said, don't look at the app.
Yeah.
And I said, what do you mean? And she's like, they're down 2 rip right away.
Yeah.
And I'm like,
which we've seen so many times this year, right?
Shit. You know, I mean, so immediately I'm pissed. I get home and Lindholm scores, and then it goes good, for the Flames. And I thought the first was horrid, and the second and third were, I thought we were pretty damn good. The, mm-hmm. the goal that Hakanpää scored was just a freaking goofy-ass goal. I mean, I can't blame Markstrom on that. I can't.
No, but I mean, that's the kind of stuff that's even more frustrating, because it's like that goal like that, it's like, oh, are you kidding? After we've hit, 90,421 posts this year.
I know.
Like, you're just... it's just the luckest. Now, again, I said this on Twitter too. Like, I don't want to chalk anything that's gone on this year up to just bad luck, because that's completely erroneous.
No, we haven't had puck luck. Yeah. But you make puck luck, right? Do you believe in that? I believe you make puck luck by other attributes of your game. I don't know. I think you make your luck. But anyways, we haven't.
Yeah, I agree. Absolutely.
We haven't been lucky, but we sure as hell haven't been good either.
No. Definitely not.
So this game, I don't know. We salvage a point. Let's put it that way. So sure. I'll
allow it.
I'm excited at this point because we are, I believe, 3 back of Winnipeg still. And they all lost miserably on Sunday. So I'm like, hey, yeah. This is good.
That was the best out of town scoreboard night the Flames have had.
It was. Yeah. And so I was like, okay, hey, hockey guns are working with us here. None of the teams we're in this race with are good, including us, but they're all sucking. Go to LA. And I've acquired, from what I've seen this year of LA, my respect factor has went up a lot. This is a
they're a good hockey team.
This is a good hockey team. This is a really good hockey team. And now, they showed it.
They did, and the Flames did not show up at all. Now, they were atrocious.
They were really good. We were really bad. Not a good combination.
Yeah. That's how you get an 8-2 score. I mean, if you're flat and you lose, 2-0, let's say. Okay, yeah, you lost a really good hockey team. But when you lose 8-2, it's like, okay, they pounded you because they're good, and they pounded you because you suck. Like, there's... that big of a spread, that's really the only realistic way I think you can look at it. But it was a very, very, very deflating effort.
It was one of those games. And not that I want to or can afford to lose any games right now, but looking at the schedule, I could see us losing this game. Mm-hmm. Second game of a road trip. First game of a road trip. I'm like, LA's good. Like, if we're going to lose one, I guess on paper I'd probably look at this one. But then to lose it 8-2... took my perspective of, oh my gosh, this team just is showing us nightly how bad they can be.
Yeah. And that's, yeah, it was a great example of that.
Yeah, it was frustrating. So Tuesday, second night of a back-to-back in Anaheim, I could have given, I shouldn't say that because I did care because I did watch it. But I was not, it's not like I had the old AirBuds in for the pregame show. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, yeah, not sure. Excited. That's the highlight of that game to me, apart from Tyler Toffoli's three assists, was that shot from Lindholm. Man, did he ever rip that puck. It's like he owed him money. That was awesome.
He did rip that one. You know what? You know what? Troy Stetcher, that was a snipe too.
I've said before, I think I said on the show not that long ago, actually, our deadline show after he was acquired, he's underrated offensively and didn't do much with it in Arizona. I would absolutely re-sign him.
So absolutely. Would I. Number one, I think he wants to stay in Calgary. Number two, I think we can get him at a real good price. And is he a huge offensive player? No, but he's reliable as hell defensively. In my mind, I know some people are already ripping him on Twitter, but he's been fine.
Yeah, and can he ever rip a jersey? Holy hell.
But, you know, it just blows my mind. We have guys like Hanifin struggled, and he's been a little bit better lately. Zadorov's been a freaking train wreck lately. And you never see anybody tear him, but boy, they're fire. Not Troy Stetcher sucks. I'm like, what?
No, like, Stetcher was the safest, smartest, most reasonably priced blue line acquisition they could have made. That's how. And I would challenge anybody to argue they could have gone after this guy, could have gone after that guy, and make the argument they could have got a better player or paid less or whatever the argument be. Like, I think he's a perfect fit. And based on their situation with the cap and everything else and what he's shown, absolutely resign him.
Yep, I agree. That shot was right off the post.
And great patience, like to walk in like that. I mean, that's the kind of swagger that Oliver Shillington brought to the lineup offensively.
Yes. I found it lacking, you know? Did you see the look on Gibson's face when that went in? He's just like, you're going to let him walk in from the blue line to the dot on me with no pressure.
Well, if I recall correctly, too, and this is really important to point out, Gibson came into a Ducks team that was fairly good.
Yep.
And he was really good, make no mistake. I think it's like guys like Marc-Andre Fleury came to the league on horrific teams, got shelled, and had to slowly work their way up, you know, playing better and having a better team in front of them. Gibson had the opposite. He goes from being on a fairly competitive team to a garbage team. So I can just imagine what that would do. You come to the league thinking, yeah, you know, like I'm the best candidate. We made the playoffs. We won around, whatever. And then it's like, like you just said, he's setting his crease. Troy Stetcher just keeps walking closer and closer. He's like, look, really, guys? Like, what the fuck is going on here?
I know. And then when he went off the ice at the end of the game, it was like he had a hot date. Like, he was ready to get the hell out of there. He was off the ice and done. He was done with that night. And that was against the Calgary Flames, the least sniping team in the league.
Yeah, pretty well. Pretty well.
Injuries. Tanev did miss Tuesday's game with an upper body injury. I don't know what you've heard, or I haven't heard anything, but
literally nothing.
I don't think this is that. Quite honestly, I don't think this is serious.
I'm inclined to believe, for no other reason than this is how my brain works, but I'm inclined to believe it was almost like a maintenance day. Like, he's a little bit banged up. It's like, you know what? This is a weaker opponent. You know, but it's hard to believe that in a sense because they need the points. But
he's not been great. But I shouldn't say that because. He hasn't done anything wrong, but he's not been himself. Is that bad to say?
Well, who on the team has other than Toffoli and Backlund, right?
Good point. So. We'll get some housekeeping things here, and we'll get into the heart of this stuff. But are you getting tired of Markstrom banging and slashing and busting sticks? Like, I am. I don't get it.
Yeah, I haven't paid too much attention to it, but I'm also a guy that, you know, when I play pickup hockey, I did that a lot too. So, and I can't even begin to express how meaningless the type of hockey I play is. But yeah, it does worry me.
He's whipping that stick the other night, and I sound like some freaking worried mom here, and I'm not this type of person, but.
Worried mom.
he's whipping the stick around in front of the bench, just beating it off and I'm like, there's like freaking players standing right there. What are you doing? Like, you're going to hit somebody, you know?
Well, yeah, between that type of behavior, his play in the last, not really that last game, and then how Vladar played against Anaheim, I think we're back to the maybe we can put there the next start.
I love this. Last night I heard a 960. I'm not repping these guys because I feel fucking horrible for them. They have to talk about this for 2 hours after every game, right after this. Yeah. I feel horrible for them.
That's a death sentence. Nights like the LA night. Oh,
God. But anyways, I hear this. Well, are we back to the... Does it sound like a good idea? They knew it when they said it to you. They're like, does it sound like a good idea to go back to winning you're in?
Yeah, like I don't want to push that narrative too much, nor do I care to get into another discussion about goaltending because we've had a lot of them. But I don't know. At this point, like I don't see a harm in going back to Vidar for a game. He hadn't played in a long time anyway, and he played really against the Ducks. So
I think we'll see Markstrom back in there, and I guess all in all.
Oh, I think you're right.
All in all, I'm fine with it.
At this point, goaltending, like it's not even the biggest issue. It's just team's performance and overall attitude.
Consistency. Yeah. Good news. Looks like the arena event committee met again, this meeting on this Friday, March 24th. Two city council groups walk through the dome. Things are quiet on this. That might be a good thing. Sometimes not knowing is maybe the good thing, but we need a new arena.
Oh, man. I love the dome, and I've always argued that with the dome, I don't believe there's a bad seat in that place because I've had from the glass to the old sport check zone up, you know, in the rafters.
Have basically. You sat up there?
Oh, hell yeah. Absolutely. Yeah.
I don't know if I could do that.
Well, I was a starving student back then. I was as close to the ice as I was going to get.
I know. I'm such a chicken shit. I'm such a bad guy with heights. I don't know if I could do it, man.
Oh, it's nothing to it. Nothing to it. But yeah, like that building has a lot of charm, but yeah, it's antiquated. It's old. I think it is becoming an issue with players wanting to potentially be in Calgary as other teams have such nice facilities. So
it's a done deal. This is going to happen.
Oh, you know what? Like a team like all that talk about moving to Houston and everything else, like that was never going to happen. Like it's just ridiculous to me. Like a healthy franchise is Gary Bettman's, like, you know, despite his love affair with trying to make the Coyotes succeed. These franchises are solvent. They make lots of money. Like they're strong hockey markets. So it was never going to go anywhere, but yeah, the arena thing is it's gotta get done. It sounds like it's getting done. And to your point, I think that the no news is good news kind of thing is, I think they're laying some groundwork, and I think we should hear more in the next week or so.
That's kind of why I put it on the topic to get up. I wanted to get your take on it. I don't know. I just feel like it's going in the right direction now.
I hear it a lot. And like you said, I think that's a good thing.
Let's get to the heart of the news. The question of the day. Daryl Sutter, has he lost the room?
I am leaning towards yes. But in saying that, and I want your take on this too, of course.
I have very mixed feelings.
Well, and I do too, but so the thing is when you say a coach has lost the room, implicit in that statement is that it's the coach's fault, which I do think applies in terms of his personnel usage, scratching certain players. And even though like Jacob Pelche came out and said he understood, blah, 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 blah. Like,
I don't know that that's the worst scratch. I don't think consistent games.
It's just an example, but you can't tell me that having him scratched and Milan Lucic play is a good coaching decision.
Absolutely not. And you know, I've always been a huge Daryl Sutter fan.
Mm-hmm. And rightfully so. The guy's won everywhere he's been.
But I have questioned some things this year. But
of course.
I'll also defend him on a couple things. But I'm sorry. Keep going.
There's different ways of looking at it. You've made a bone of contention, as many have, about Nazem Kadri and his poor attitude and poor play. And I'm 100% with you on that. I don't fault Daryl Sutter for how bad Nazem Kadri's been. I think that falls on Kadri. And this is where I get into mixed feelings about it because certain players, I think, have not merely been good enough. But on the whole, whether it's Sutter's press conferences, his personnel usage, seemingly, and I know he's got a wicked poker face, but you know the nonchalant attitude towards some of these losses or what's going on, I am a big proponent at this point of moving to a guy like Mitch Love, like from the Wranglers. Like there's some great young coaching candidates that will find opportunities elsewhere if we don't, you know, promote them at some point. And I don't know that Daryl Sutter's shelf life, you would think, could be longer than this. But where there's smoke, there's fire, right?
So let me ask, sprouting off of what you just said there, mm-hmm. my question would be to that, and I'm not necessarily saying I disagree, because right. I've went through like a, it's kind of like a breakup with a girlfriend. It's like, like some days I just want to kick Sutter to the curb. And then the next day I'm like, you know, there's a lot of shit that he's got to be standing on the bench going, what the hell am I supposed to do with this?
Well, and that's kind of, and actually that's a great analogy, because I'm kind of going through that right now. It's like one day I miss this person like crazy, and the next day I want to strangle them, right? And it's the same kind of thing. If Sutter's gone, you're going to think back to those great memories of 2004 run or last season when they had a just unbelievable regular season. So
okay,
it's a love-hate thing for sure.
We bitched in Calgary for a long time. Hey, every coach we bring in is Gullickson, you know, all these inexperienced, cheap coaches, right? That's all we did for decades. And we ran them through the filter and kicked them to the curb quicker than any other franchise in the league.
Yep.
And then we get Sutter back, and he's a tenured, veteran, winning, proven coach.
Yep.
And the first year he was back for, I believe, what was it, about 20 games, Kyle? Probably 20?
Yeah, actually, it was very similar to his first tenure with the team when he came in at the end of the 2002-03 season.
And we heard discontent in the locker room. We heard this and that.
And the very similar record to his first tenure.
And the team wasn't very good.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, well, then the next year, our expectations were down last year, and they fire out of the gate, and they rip off a season of epic proportion, and all of a sudden, Sutter's the greatest thing that ever walked the earth. Everybody in the locker room loves everybody, and we are the most tight-knit group you'll ever see.
Yeah.
Then, this year, we get off to a banger start. We're ripping and rolling, and everybody loves Sutter, and he's the greatest. And then the shitskids start, and everybody loves Sutter still, and then all of a sudden the losing keeps going, and we get more frustrated with the losing, and we get more frustrated with the losing. And now all of a sudden, we pointed it at Treliving, we pounded it at Huberto, we pointed it at all the players, and it's like, well, all right, we need to fire Sutter now. And I'm not saying we don't. I'm really torn. Like, I'm going to sound like the biggest hypocrite in this, because I'm back and forth. I don't even know what I would do. But I can't help but believe that Daryl Sutter forgot how to coach in 1 year. Although, I do look at his lineups quite frequently and go, I don't get it.
Maybe he has. I mean, he also, I mean, that's a bit of a stretch. Obviously, he knows how to coach, but how to coach this group. And I think you can't say enough about the fact that the top players in the team are gone, replaced with new top players.
Mm-hmm.
So just because the old top players responded, and I don't necessarily think like that John Gaudreau necessarily loved Sutter, but he liked playing for him. It's like when you have a personal trainer that, like, holy shit, this guy puts me through the ringer, but I'm in the best shape of my life, right?
Yeah, but you know what? You know, you look and you talk to other, you hear other players talk that have played for Sutter.
Yeah.
And have you heard any of them that say that he was an asshole? Maybe Dan Mike Carcillo. Commodore? What?
Dan Carcillo.
Okay, well, that's okay. Oof, great example. You know what I'm saying, though? Like, we've never heard Matthew Tkachuk say he's a prick. We've never heard Johnny Gaudreau say he's a prick. And no, they're not going to come out and be like, hey, this. Yeah. But in time, Sutter's coached hundreds and hundreds of NHL players. Hundreds.
Yep.
In time, we would hear, if he was really that big of a dick, we would hear a lot of them say, after they've ridden retired for 5 years, like, what are you going to lose? Like, they could say, you know, he was a prick to play for. But we've heard a lot of them say, Rhett Warner being one of them, say, yeah, there was days I was like, oh, I hated him, but most of the time I had it coming, and he made me a better player.
That's also Rhett Warner with the benefit of hindsight, right?
Yes. I agree.
Yeah.
So what
it's like when you work for somebody and you think, man, that guy was a dick to work for, but it's like, you know what? He made me a harder worker.
But you
I get where I am today because that guy when I was 16 years old.
I agree. I had a hockey coach the same way. I mean, God, he was, when I think about it now, he's a freaking mirror image of Daryl Sutter.
Same as my power skating coach, but man, he pushed me hard and made me a halfway decent skater when I was absolute trash before I met him. So,
you know, and my coach, his name was Bruce Olson. He was a hell of a hockey player. He just passed away a couple years ago. He worked our ass off, but and I hated him too. But you know what? I'd see him outside of the rink, and he was the nicest guy, and I respected the hell out of him. And I think that's a little bit how Daryl Sutter is. But all of a sudden, I sit and I wonder, like, this isn't all Daryl Sutter's fault. And like you said,
absolutely not.
These players are thinking in retrospect, right? Mm-hmm. Well, I refuse to cave to the pansy ass, I'm a pro athlete, baby attitude of he's going to have to change his style because I'm here. Do you know what I'm saying? Like, why he's being paid to coach this team to win, and the player's job is to follow his coaching style, whether they agree to it or not.
Well, yeah, absolutely. I think also, if you think about the discontent, who amongst the team who was here last year is having a terrible season? Like, Mangiapane scored less, okay? Dubé is having a career season. Backlund's probably having the best two-way season of his career, which is definitely saying something.
He has been.
Lewis is the same as always. Lucic doesn't really change.
Coleman's been the same.
Coleman's been very good. So, Tanev. Fine. Hanifin, I would like. Good. Everybody who's here before that played for Sutter has been about what they were before.
Yep. You're right. This is a very good point. Very good point.
So, the new guys, clearly Kadri is front and center, largely because he's so animated on the ice as well.
He's a baby.
And, you know. Yeah, and like, you know, Huberto playing, and this was a huge, huge coaching mistake by Sutter, was having Huberto on the right wing. It made no sense.
Like, I agree.
So, you know, a good friend of mine who worked in the St. John organization, not far from here, who knows Huberto quite well as a person, as a player, he was telling me, and I think I mentioned this before too, when Huberto came to Calgary, he's like, you won't find a better player in the league along the boards. His board play, the way he corrals the puck, the way he pivots. But you think about board play, you're going to be way more effective on the side you're used to. To go from playing the left wing you've been your whole life to playing the right side, and you're at a completely different angle all the time. Of course, I never saw this miraculous board play, or rarely saw it, that my friend was talking about. So your superstar winger and, you know, your really superstar center that you signed, like, those two are the most disappointing players in the team relative to what we expected. And they're the ones under the new coach. And we know for sure, like I said, that the Kadri discontent is probably the biggest, we'll say, dissenter amongst the group. Doesn't mean that I'm blaming this on Nazem Kadri, but the old guard that was here with Sutter before is pretty much performing the same. The problems are Kadri's unhappy and playing like garbage. Huberto hasn't had a very good year at all. And some of the personnel choices that Sutter's made have been really, really suspect and quite frankly shitty on a lot of nights.
I agree. So where's the, when we drill down though, and like, it's hard to do this because like, we're not in the room, and like, I see these, you know, Eric Francis tweets today saying that there is discontent in the room and there's problems in the room. And it's like, I don't know. We talked about this. It's like, okay, well, have you ever seen a team that's losing have a great room?
Not like this. No.
And have you ever seen, and how many winning teams do you know that have a shitty room? Like, winning solves freaking everything. If Kadri's winning right now, Kadri's pulling the pout fest because he won a Stanley Cup last year and it wasn't supposed to go this way.
Yeah. Well, and he's, you know, we set up this before too. Like, his mannerisms in the ice, you know, there's a reason that people hate him. He's our version of a Brad Marchand, a Tom Wilson, you know, whatever. I hated
Kadri. He doesn't even play gritty, though. He's not even playing.
Like, he has, but he certainly hasn't of late.
I have not seen one thing this year where I was like, oh, that was a little bit of a dirty hit by Kadri. Oh, that was a gritty move by Kadri. It's more of it's been like, wow, that was a dive. What's he trying to do here? Why is he yelling at the ref again?
Yeah. Yeah, he's been...
And it sucks because I had high hopes for him. I really did. And
yeah, he was the missing piece of the puzzle after the Huberto trade. It's like, okay, sweet. Like,
and now, I'm not saying there isn't problems in the room. And quite honestly, if I had to put money on it now, has he lost the room? I would say he probably has. Is that non-fixable? No, I don't think it's non-fixable. I don't at all.
Yeah.
with a couple tweaks, this, and I know people will be like, oh, you're just being overly optimistic. I still look at this roster, and I still think it's a good roster. With a few tweaks, and there's going to be tweaks because there has to be. Right? Because guys are leaving because they're all done with their contract.
100%.
We make a few moves. We shuffle a few things. I don't know that you need to fire Sutter. I mean, I don't know that maybe it's a good move to fire Sutter. It might be. It might be the best move. But I'll be goddamned if we should be firing him to accommodate Kadri.
No, ideally the best case scenario for everybody involved, and somebody tweeted this the other day, or it was in response to something, whatever it was. Ideally, at Sutter's age, with his pedigree, with the money he's already made, they do this. The team and the player mutually, or the coach and the team, rather, mutually part ways. Now, regardless of whether or not you think this is fixable, regardless of anything to do with that, if anything that we've been hearing, anything we've seen is to be believed, and that's that there's a rift, there's a problem, I still think that is the best possible scenario. So if it's Sutter stays, Sutter's fired, or the team and Sutter mutually part ways, I'm picking C all day long as the best route forward for this team. Because regardless, this core, which we signed long-term, is going to be here a lot longer than Daryl Sutter. So at some point, that change has to take place. Now, would I love to see this team sneak into the playoffs and surprise everybody and work their asses off under Sutter? Nothing would be better.
I know.
But it's not too likely at this
point,
right?
And that's how both of us feel. And we're going to talk about that before we end the show today, if there's a chance. But Cal, here's my problem with that. And you know what? I saw that too, what you're talking about, the mutually going. I like it too. I think that's how it has to be done, because Sutter has done so many wonderful things for Calgary's team over the years.
Yep.
That's how it has to happen. But did you ever think of this? How many players in that room are if Kadri, we don't know this, if Kadri is the guy stirring the shit in the room, how many guys are sitting back going, oh, that son of a bitch is going to come in here, play 60 games, and freaking shake this shit up and cause all these problems? Is the rift between Kadri and the coach, or is the rift between Kadri and some of the other players? Because I would bet money, if he's got a riff with the coach, he's got a riff with other players.
Good chance, yep. Now, how far that runs or how deep that is, I don't know. But
I don't either. And we don't know. We're all speculating.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I mean, it's, again, because it's so clear how he feels and what he's thinking. Not just on how his body language, but also what he actually says. I don't know. There's probably something to that. I would love nothing more, again, than for him to come out tomorrow night against Vegas and just, you know, have a 5-point night, first star. Like, okay, he figured it out. You know, he's done blaming other people. Like, he's going to be your best player and might actually get us into a playoff spot.
He's going to be accountable?
A lot to ask, eh?
Well, I sit and look. Okay, I don't know why I'm pointing at this guy, but I sit and look at Blake Coleman, right? Blake Coleman's been through coaches, some very good coaches. Won Stanley Cups, and he came to Calgary last year, and he was Kadri last year. The big free agent signing.
Yep.
Coming into the team.
You meant in terms of a bad attitude.
No. He was the big free agent signing, coming in with a new coach. You know, he didn't know Daryl Sutter. He never played for Daryl Sutter.
Yep.
And he got along just fine last year and did just fine last year, right? He did have a struggle in the middle of the year last year.
Yeah,
but he worked through it, and everything went fine. What's he sitting there thinking? I came in. I did fine with him. I don't know. I just wonder, like, what some of these veterans are thinking when Kadri walks in.
We're going to have to ask Rasmus Anderson. So remember when Ryan Leslie asked him about James Neal? He was just so dismissive, so...
Yeah.
Remind me in 8 years, and we'll see if we get a hold of Rasmus Anderson and ask him.
I don't know. Like, it's so bad because, like, I couldn't help today, but when I saw these tweets, and then I'm on my Facebook fan page, which I love doing, visiting with other Flames fans, and most of the time, whatever. But
is that Flames Hub?
Yeah. There's a couple other ones, too, but yes, but Flames Hub.
Yeah.
But today I see the same people that rip Eric Francis on a daily basis going, Eric's right. Kadri and Sutter aren't getting along. I'm like, oh my God, you guys.
This is the issue I have with some of those fan pages.
Oh my gosh. Like all of a sudden now you agree with him. Like you've been blocked on Twitter and you hate him.
People that like, they're like, hey, Jonathan Huberto struggled, so I have a trade to propose. We're going to trade Jonathan Huberto to 1986 for Wayne Gretzky at that time. What do you guys all think? And they're fucking serious. Oh, they drive me mental.
And I'm sure we're all they're all nice people because I'm on there too, and I say stupid shit too. So I mean, like, I'm not off the hook on this, but like,
I say stupid shit every day of my life. Ask anybody who knows me.
Go, Matthew Coronato. Plays for Harvard. He plays Friday afternoon in the final 16 of the NCAA. They lose and they're done. It's single elimination at this point. Treleaven is heading out to Bridgeport, Connecticut to meet with him. Harvard's ranked 7th. Ohio State, their opponent in the first round, is 8th. He is a Holbury Baker finalist for this year. Couple questions. It looks like the deal that's going to be offered, it's been reported that it's going to be $950,000, the league rookie max deal, with up to $400,000 in bonuses. I can't help but think that some playing time will be part of the negotiations, and it would make no sense to sign him and send him immediately to, I almost said Stockton, the Calgary Wranglers.
Yeah.
Although a playoff run with them would be ideal in my mind.
For the Wranglers especially.
And for him too. I really think that would be a good thing. Where are you on this? What do you think of him as a player? And if he is signed, where does he fit into the lineup?
Well, the timing of it all has a lot to do with it, right? So he is very likely going to sign, and there's been some conjecture out there like, oh, he may not sign. Like, there's no reason to believe he's not going to sign.
I think he signs.
So yeah, well, you know, I mean, everything beyond that, like, it'll get figured out, but I don't think there's an issue around him signing. Ideally time with the Wranglers, but realistically, and we'll, as you said, we'll touch on this, but I mean, I think they're going to be out of the playoff picture all but officially within the next potentially a few days.
We said that last week, Kyle. We did.
Well, but again, they're no further ahead. They're still 4 points out, and they're running out of games.
They're not just four out. I'm getting ahead. They don't have to hold the tiebreaker either. So,
well, that's the thing. You know, they get 94 fucking shootout overtime losses. So anyway, in an 82 game season, so Coronato, I think, is going to sign. I think he'll end up getting some games with the big club. In terms of where he fits in the lineup, I mean, if Sutter's coaching, it's going to be on the fourth line because he just doesn't entrust young players right away with anything beyond that, seemingly. He'll want them again, you know, alongside some savvy vets. So, what are your thoughts?
How do you see him fitting in? I think he'll be lower in the line, and it's probably the smarter thing to do. It really is. I'd love to see him.
Still getting some reps. It's not going to be meaningful hockey other than it's like, hey, this is the NHL. Acclimatize yourself a bit, and we'll see you in training camp, right?
I'd love to see him with Backlund and Huberto on the right-hand side.
That would be a lot of fun.
That's where I'd love to see him, because I trust Backlund probably more than anybody on the team, to be honest with you, and I know that's
all. Well, as you should. Anybody should. And then Huberto, I mean, with his sublime passing skills, I mean, he's going to give that kid some confidence.
Right. And we've also seen Huberto work good with the young Peltier, and I don't know. I started to think about this the other night. Everybody's been ripping Huberto all year, and I've went to his defense, and am I happy with his production? Hell no. But you know what? I do feel like his production, he maybe hasn't been happy, but who is happy with their firing at a third of their normal production? But since Peltier has been with him, he's had a lot better. It looks like his attitude's really good, and he looks like he's having fun.
Yeah, I think so.
Contrary to what his agent says, it looks like he's having some fun.
Yeah, his agent just needs to shut his mouth. We've been down this road with him before, as we've talked about. You know,
I don't know. I hope Coronato gets some games. Let's put it this way. I'm a big college hockey NCAA guy. I don't think, I'll be completely wrong on this. I don't think he makes it through the weekend for some reason. I don't.
Yeah.
I think they lose. not maybe on Friday. Well, I think
you follow NCAA a little bit more closely than I do, but based on everything I've read and seen, which isn't a lot, but enough to tell me that it's not likely that they're going to get through. So
I don't think so.
If they do, he's going to be a big reason why.
He will be the reason why.
Yeah. So, and I think it's important that he gets some reps with the big club too. And as an aside to how we started the show, his game worn rookie jersey would be worth quite a lot in the game worn community.
Get on that, Kyle. Get the money. All right, good league.
I got to get those other two Lewis jerseys, right? That's my focus right now. And I like to get a Pelletier, but now this is a problem with the habit. It's expensive. Anyway, the prospect pool for Calgary is not that deep, but at the same time, Zari, Coronado, those are guys like A-list prospects. And again, I keep bringing them up, and I will keep bringing up Jeremy Poirier. There are some young players.
Me and you both think.
Yeah.
I think highly of him.
I watched him win the World Cup last year, and I was just, I love the way he played. And French connection to Jonathan Huberdeau, also another former St. John Sea Dog. So you think that Huberdeau's bringing Pelletier along? Bring another Sea Dog in the Flames, and Huberdeau will be all over that. All over.
All right, we will be back to talk about the playoff race and preview the three games ahead this week. Get all your Flames Unfiltered podcasts, team news, team updates, and highlights at flamesunfiltered.com. This crazy playoff race for the Flames continues to slog along. Three games this week, Thursday, Vegas in town. Saturday, San Jose in Calgary. Tuesday, LA in Calgary. Some tough opponents, minus San Jose. Do you know that San Jose is the only team we've kind of walked through this year? We've played them. This is our third of fourth meeting with them on Saturday night or Saturday afternoon. I hate afternoon games. We've beat them 5-2 and 7-3. That's the only team we haven't had one goal battles with. So let's keep that tradition going. So.
Yeah, no kidding. Watch out for Eric Carlson, though. Holy hell, what a year. Wow.
Yeah, but you know what? Put him on the ice. That guy sucks defensively. He does. It's a gong show out there. Boy, he's putting up points, though, isn't he?
Oh, unbelievably so.
It's crazy how he goes dormant like that for a couple years, and then all of a sudden just is back putting up points like that. It's crazy.
Well, not even like recovering to like a respectable 45-50 point pace, but like a point per game. It's like, what the hell?
It's crazy.
I thought he was washed. Anyway,
here's where the Flames stand. I broke it down again. We have 10 games remaining. We are 4 points back of Winnipeg. 7 games at home, 3 on the road, 1 back-to-back. Projected points right now, if we keep at the pace, will be 92. That's not even going to be close to enough.
No.
Winnipeg has 10 games remaining. They have 1 back-to-back, 5 at home, 5 on the road. A fairly tough schedule, I will say that. Nashville has 13 games remaining, 5 back of Winnipeg. They're 1 behind Calgary, 8 at home, 5 on the road, 3 back-to-back, so. And they have a Seattle, 2 games against Seattle in Seattle, starting tomorrow night, I believe. That's going to be tough. And they got Toronto, they got Boston. They've got Dallas, they got Vegas, they've got Winnipeg, they got a game with Calgary, Colorado, Minnesota. Tough schedule for Nashville. Really
tough.
They've
got a couple of rookies that have really shone for them since the deadline, so they're a little more dangerous than I would have thought, but that is a tough, tough schedule.
They have a tough schedule. Seattle, 2 points up on Winnipeg. They have 12 games remaining, 6 at home, 6 on the road, 2 back-to-backs. They've got LA. They got a pretty easy schedule. They really do. They end the year with a home and away with Vegas. But at that point, Vegas might be like, we're just going to sit here and wait for the playoffs. I don't know. Yeah.
It could be icing a less than optimal lineup, potentially.
I did the math. If we keep at the pace, or if Winnipeg keeps gaining points at the pace they are, we have to go 9-1. To overcome the tiebreaker. Okay? Wow. Not good math. But with them having 3 in a row on the road now, they have the Western swing going on. They play New Jersey. They play Calgary. They play Minnesota. They play Colorado. I mean, if they stumble, I mean, right now, let's put it this way. We're not getting in unless Winnipeg stumbles miserably.
Yep, exactly.
Hellebuck is tired.
If that game against the Jets is a three-point game, we are absolutely not making the playoffs. That has to be a clear two-point win for Calgary.
It has to be. It absolutely has to be a two-point. And if we go now and we lose to Vegas and then lose to LA at home, I don't know. I don't know what happens. I don't know how it happens.
Doesn't look good. And again, we're much like we said last week, we're not trying to be overly negative here. Trying to be very realistic. This is a 4 points doesn't sound like a lot, but every week that we talk, we don't have as many points out of that week as ideally we should have got. And you're relying on other teams to screw it up. That's all you can do.
Yeah, and I can't help. I mean, I can hardly rip the Flames. We have points in 7 of the last 10. So, I mean,
sure. But where were those points, in January?
But we're still dropping points to teams we shouldn't be.
Well, again, that loss to Anaheim, a couple weeks ago, that comes to mind, or a week ago, whatever it was. It's just, I don't know. I still feel like if this team could somehow sneak in, they'd be like, okay. They're all sudden as a playoff coach,
I know.
Man, it is going to be, it's going to take a lot of luck and a lot of good hockey from the Flames to make that happen.
The only way it could happen, I do believe in clinching down. Let's say Winnipeg goes on this Western swing and they got Anaheim, LA, and San Jose. Let's say they drop two of those three.
Yeah.
And then lose to New Jersey. They're going to be clinching a little bit then. And what if we can get three of our next four? What if we beat Vegas, beat San Jose, lose to LA, and beat Vancouver, and then beat Anaheim?
We're fantasizing a little bit here, but yeah.
I know, because we haven't went on a three-game run. I know I'm getting way out there, but I do think we can beat Vegas. And I think San Jose is completely beatable.
Mm-hmm.
And then I think LA would be a push. I think then we got Vancouver, Anaheim, and Chicago in a row after that. Okay, it's doable.
Yep.
And then we got the Winnipeg game, and we've said it 100 times. You have to get 2 points out of that.
Yep, definitely.
It could happen. It is a pipe dream, but it could happen.
It's not quite a pipe dream yet.
No, because Winnipeg could, I don't know. It's a difficult road. That's probably
it. Sure is.
Fair way to put it.
That's gonna be a really interesting weekend to see what happens here. Really interesting. I mean, with what happens to Coronado, what happens to the Flames. I mean, we're really, really into the nitty gritty now. So, be fun.
It's so funny because the night we lost to LA, it's like it's over, right? That's our initial reaction, and then you sit down the next morning, you're having your cup of coffee, you look at the standings, and you're like, well, nobody else is pulling away here either. So.
You're kind of stuck between, just put me into my goddamn misery and come on, win. You can do it, right?
I can't remember a year where I've been more stuck with that. It's been a little bit trying, but I don't know.
A little bit.
We'll see. We'll see what happens. So
that's all we can do.
We are back next week to,
with more positivity.
We were pretty positive today, Kyle. You didn't do too bad.
This is better than last week. I don't feel as hateful today.
You know what the difference was? Do you know that
what?
Our record of doing shows the day after losses is pretty high? And it's hard to be positive after you got watched a shit kicking the night before, right?
Fair enough.
Oh, we appreciate each and every one of you guys listening, reaching out. Flames fans are the best, and hopefully this week brings more positivity. As Kyle and I will be back next week to talk more Flames hockey. Have a good week, Flames fans.
Take it easy, guys.
Get connected. Flames Unfiltered can be found on Twitter at Flame Unfiltered. Check out the Facebook page at Flames Unfiltered. Host Brad Brood is on Twitter at Brad Brood. And host Kyle Lewis is on Twitter at VanLewis14. Like what you hear? Rate, review, and subscribe on Apple Podcasts. Flames Unfiltered can be found on all the major podcast players
Want to watch the show? You got it. Check out Inside Edge Hockey Media Group for every show. Subscribe while you watch. Thanks for listening, watching, and interacting. Enjoy the hockey action.
We call them playoff! Yeah, baby! Playoff! Yeah, baby!
Thanks for tuning in to Flames Unfiltered. Check back for more action-packed Calgary Flames talk.
This episode of Flames Unfiltered was copyrighted and produced by Inside Edge Hockey Media Group.